Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Dr. Nir Barzilai, professor on aging and longevity, author of Age Later, Health Span, Lifespan, and the New Science of Longevity, discussing Ashkenazic populations of extremely long lives and the science of living longer, healthier lives. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom and a Chag Sameach and Moadim L'Simcha. We are celebrating the lovely holiday of Sukkot and getting ready for Simchat Torah, the concluding festival of our long Jewish fall holiday marathon, which ends with a wonderful bang this Monday night and Tuesday, or Tuesday night and Wednesday, depending on your affiliation. I'll explain. If you are conservative or Orthodox and not living in the land of Israel, Tuesday night and Wednesday are the wonderful festival of Simchat Torah, when we complete reading the Torah and begin again for the coming year. Simchat Torah literally means rejoicing with Torah or celebrating the teaching, and it's a time of singing, dancing, drinking, eating, and real joy. We'll celebrate Tuesday night at my own congregation Beit Simcha at 6:30 p.m., You can join the fun in person or on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, and it is as much fun as any Jewish holiday. Simchat Torah always reminds me, when I started as a student at Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, they asked me to lead services starting just after Simchat Torah, which I attended. I sat through the first few hakafot, the parades with the Torah, listening to dull, plodding songs. Finally, I turned to the dean of the college, Rabbi Ken Ehrlich, and asked him, what's going on? Like me, he is descended from Eastern European Jews who do Simchas Torah singing, dancing, with great enthusiasm and energy. It's a near wanton celebration, to be honest. Ken explained that when he first came to the college, the Torah hakafot for Simchat Torah were done in a slow, stately procession, accompanied by plodding organ music, and he himself turned to a professor and asked, it's Simchas Torah. How come they are marching and not dancing? And the professor answered, they are German Jews. They are dancing. Anyway, here's what Simchat Torah is supposed to sound like. On Simchat Torah, which literally means celebration of Torah, we actually complete reading the end of the book of Deuteronomy with the story of the death of Moses, and then immediately open another Torah and chant the opening passages of Genesis. As Jews, we are always reading Torah, and Simchat Torah celebrates our dedication to learning and growing in knowledge, and we hope in our relationship to God. And as a way to end the holiday cycle for this fall, which began at the end of August with Slichot, continuing through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah is a great way to complete it all with Torah. And then, of course, we start all over with the chanting of Genesis, Bereishit, the same night we finish reading Torah. Last year, the Israeli group Call to Action recorded a wonderful song called Bereishit, a setting of Ehud Manor's beautiful poem, Bereishit, Genesis. In the beginning there was sky, in the beginning the sea was blue, in the beginning I had day and night, hours many as sand. In the beginning the land was a soft grass as a present for her. In the beginning, a garden in Eden, a garden with no gate from heaven, good rain falling, and God merciful with dawn. He gave you to me to guard and keep, you to me. In the beginning I had sun. In the beginning birds sang to me. In the beginning the fruit was ripe in the evening, strawberries and grains, a garden in Eden. The original artist who recorded this did a great job on it. During this week of Simchat Torah, when we will chant Bereishit Genesis in the synagogue, here's Gabi Shoshan's 2011 cover of his own recording from way back in the 1970s, Bereishit.
Bereishit hayu shamayim. Bereishit haya hayam kacho. היו לי יום ולילה, לילה, שעות הרבה כחול. בראשית הייתה הארץ, ושעשב רך כשילה, שילה.
That was the song Bereishit Genesis for the beginning of Torah this week at Simchat Torah, Tuesday night at Congregation Beit Simcha at 6:30 p.m. Join us, and we'll do it again, at least the Genesis part, this coming Shabbat. When we return on Two Jewish in a Moment, our guest, the remarkable researcher Dr. Nir Barzilai, who is discovering cutting-edge science on aging, how to live longer, healthier lives, the factors that influence that, and the genetic areas that can be addressed that will help. Well, he'll fill us in on the latest discoveries when we come back in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy. New Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services or on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary safely, but in person. Call 520-276-5675. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning. come to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information, or email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. You can join us every Friday night in person or on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. with full music. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. We will hold services with full music by virtual experience and in person. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by emailing me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, or going to the website. Our wonderful religious school is also available in person and on Zoom in blended format, some students live, some online. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services live and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. That's BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest-growing Jewish congregation community in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome the distinguished Dr. Nir Barzilai, whose book, Age Later, Healthspan, Lifespan, and the New Science of Longevity, is really just the tip of the iceberg of his work on longevity. He's also done extraordinary work in older Jewish populations, and we'll talk a little bit over the course of this interview about the potential of the drug metformin and, well, some other things. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Nice being with you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Shana Tova, Chag Sameach. Tell us a little bit about how you began to get interested in longevity and the work that you've done.
You know, they say that kids have imagination, but I bet that if you ask most kids what do they think about their grandparents, they'll say, we don't know how they got to be like that. You don't realize, really, that you're going to look like your grandparents. And for me, it was something that was a curiosity that followed me through life. How is it possible that my grandfather, who was at the age that I am now when he died, and he looked old and slow and fat and without hair or a little bit white hair, how is he telling me the stories of him coming to Israel in 1918 and drying the swamps and planting the trees on the way to Jerusalem? It doesn't make sense. And for me, it always was the major biological question. Not why you get diseases, but why do you age? And that's what I follow throughout my life.
It's fascinating. You grew up in Haifa, you're now the director of the Institute for Aging Research at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and many other titles. We'll introduce them later in the show. The work that you've done with Ashkenazic Jewish populations, I think of that age, you could only find them in New York or Israel. Tell us a little bit about what you've discovered with significantly older, from 95 years old and up, populations.
Right. So let me start by making a statement really for the end, but that'll tell you what my journey. Aging has a biology. We all know, because we know who's old and who's young. But this biology that drives the diseases, so it's aging that drives the diseases, Alzheimer's and cancer and cardiovascular disease and diabetes, all the things we don't like, this aging, this biology of aging can be targeted. So in fact, aging can be delayed. Aging can be stopped and reversed in certain circumstances, okay? So the centenarians have served two opportunities. First of all, we really asked, are those people who are 100 years old, did they get sick when everybody gets sick, when they're in their 60s and now they're living 40 years with disease? Or did their lifespan and health span go together? And it's the latter. You know, they're healthy for 20, 30 years more than other people. And not only that, they have what we call compression or morbidity, which means they're sick for very little time at the end of their life. We're sick 5, 8 years at the end of our life. We accumulate the diseases and treatments, and the treatments have side effects and antagonistic to each other. No, they stay healthy, and then they die. And that means that we as humans have this capacity, and we have capacity to live to 115 years and or 120, like Moses.
Like Moshe, right, exactly.
Right, but then we die before the age of 80. We're not using our potential, and we ask, what are the longevity genes in centenarians that allow them to use a better potential than we do?
We will explore this much more, find out about the 9 genetic areas of aging with Professor Nir Barzilai when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. Email us, TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com, or TooJewishRadio.com.
Introductory Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? What do Jews believe about life after death? Introductory Judaism with Rabbi Sam Kohan is an 8-month-long weekly class, Sunday afternoons. It's available in person and on Zoom. To sign up, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. There is a charge for the class and the textbook, and scholarships are available. The Introductory Judaism class is open to everyone, Jewish or not. Want to refresh and update the Jewish learning you had before your bar mitzvah? Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Or maybe you're even thinking about becoming Jewish. Register for Introductory Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. Or you can visit BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or you can email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Introductory Judaism is taught in person and by Zoom Sunday afternoons from October to May at Congregation Beit Simcha, 2270 West Einar Road, just west of La Jolla. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, it's been the Jewish holiday season, which is always overwhelming if you do all of it.
Right. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
In quick succession.
And as a rabbi and a cantor, as wonderful as they are, I'm never deeply unhappy to see them in the rearview mirror.
Right.
You have a really good Rosh Hashanah story. Would you share that with us while the holidays are still fresh in our memories?
I'd be happy to. And some of your listeners might remember that I recently referred to this cache of letters that I found when I was clearing out my parents' condo to prepare it for sale. And the letters from the early part of my stay in Pakistan were quite detailed and brought back a lot of memories that would otherwise have faded. But they're very vivid memories, and the few words in these letters were cues. So the first year I was there, by pure chance, I went on an official trip to Lahore, which is probably the second biggest city in Pakistan after Karachi. Islamabad, where I was posted, was the capital, but Lahore was the capital of the Punjab. It was a great, splendid city with an ancient history, very distinguished. Islamabad is a modern, artificial place like Brasilia or Canberra, whatever. Right. So when I was in Lahore, I met the woman who's the president of the American club there, and her husband is the honorary consul of Italy, who's from Sardinia, but he was third generation Italian businessman in Lahore, and it turned out eventually also a Jewish Italian businessman.
Uh-huh.
And his wife's maiden name was Audrey Goldstein. And what was amazing about Audrey Goldstein is she comes from a town called Coatesville, Pennsylvania, where I have a good friend whose wedding I attended who grew up in Coatesville, Pennsylvania. That's not enough of a coincidence. Audrey's family sold her childhood home to my friend Mark's parents so that Mark and his siblings grew up in the same home as Audrey and her siblings grew up in.
Oh, my goodness.
So this friendship was like beshert, and Audrey and Sergio had two lovely little girls, whatever. I said, what are you doing for Rosh Hashanah? They said, nothing. I said, come up to Islamabad. You can stay in my house, and we'll make a Yontif meal. They said, are there other Jews there? I said, believe me, there are Jews everywhere. And I felt like a Chabad shaliach when I said that. But it turns out, in the embassy itself, the head of consular services was a nice Jewish guy with a son who knew how to blow the shofar and who brought a shofar to my house. And there were a couple other people who were either Jewish or half Jewish or one Jewish parent or whatever. There was one Filipino woman who had once been married to a Jewish Peace Corps volunteer. And she identified herself as Jewish culturally because of what she learned from her husband. So this ragtag selection of people, 15 or 18 people, come over to my house. We do a shofar blowing. We make appropriate brachot. We have apples and honey. One woman whose husband works in my part of the embassy was an Israeli army officer, or possibly Air Force. But anyway, an Israeli woman who knew for some reason how to make an Italian version of gefilte fish that was absolutely fantastic.
Well, if it's an Italian version of anything, it's fantastic.
Right. So she made gefilte fish and round chalot. My normal cook made like fish and chips, Pakistani style, and my version of tartar sauce, which is pretty good. And various other people brought different things, like somebody brought honey cake for dessert, whatever. And then we did a little bit of singing and a little bit of stories and a little bit of, you know, Hasidic, like Baal Shem Tov stories, whatever. And it was a very nice, somewhat clandestine holiday celebration in a country which officially has zero Jews and where there's not a synagogue to be found within 1,000 miles. And even Chabad has no footprint in Pakistan. But in the residence of the American number three from the embassy, there was every year, this became a tradition, of a big Rosh Hashanah meal. Second year was twice as many people.
Great story, Tom, and a nice way to finish the holiday season here on Two Jewish. Thank you so much.
Shana Tova Umetuka.
We will talk next week. Shana Tova Gam Lecha. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. A reporter went to heaven and saw two long lines. Over one was a sign that read, "For Jewish men who are dominated by their wives." The other line had a sign over the doorway which read, "For Jewish men who dominated their wives." But there was only one man in that line. Being a reporter, he went to the man all by himself in the line and said, "Sir, can you tell me why you're the only man in this line for Jewish men who dominated their wives?" "Sure," the guy said. "My wife told me to stand here." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This coming Shabbat, we read the spectacular portion of Bereishit, Genesis, the beginning of all things. It starts with those still amazing words, Bereishit bara Elohim, at the beginning of God's creating, or in the beginning God created. simple, lucid, concise. All creation emanating from one point and place, a divine force, intelligence, energy, starting the great process of existence and eventually life. A singularity, a poem to the holy unity of all being, everything from the same source. And yet the text of Genesis is deliberately ambiguous in order to encourage exploration and debate, the essential tool human beings have for learning truth and discerning meaning. Questions abound. Why is God necessary at all for creation? As the great Jewish poet Paul Celan wrote, "No one needs us out of earth and clay. No one summons our dust. Blessed art thou, no one." I would argue with Celan that such a wondrous creation did not come into being purely by accident. But there is always room for argument, which is good, and perhaps God-given, and very, very Jewish. The notion that God created and then saw each thing good provoked from the great British author D.H. Lawrence the poetic speculation that the true mystery of creation is the divine urge of creation. A great, strange urge. Even an artist knows his work was never in his mind. He could never have thought it before it happened. God is a great urge, wonderful, mysterious, magnificent, but knows nothing beforehand. The urge takes shape in the flesh, and lo, it is creation. God looks on it himself in wonder for the first time. Lo, there is a creature formed. How strange. Let me think about it. Let me form an idea. Again, we can argue, discuss, and explore whether such a marvel as the intricate workings of our world or our bodies or even a single cell could exist without some coherent plan or design. What a rich area for intellectual and spiritual engagement. Genesis is where understanding and learning begin. This is where we start to shape our faith and our theology. This text helps form our character. This is how Torah commences, with the invitation to begin exploring a great and holy text in partnership with God, in community with the whole people of Israel. When we come back, our guest, Dr. Nir Barzilai, the aging and longevity expert, author of Age Later, Health Span, Lifespan, and the New Science of Longevity, and creator of the groundbreaking study on Ashkenazic populations of extremely long lives. Well, Nir Barzilai will tell us why we age, what new drug treatments such as metformin may mean for the future of living long, healthier lives. All that and more when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The white supremacist terrorist who opened fire on a synagogue in Poway, California in 2019, killing one and injuring three, has pleaded guilty to a 113-count federal hate crime indictment. The guilty plea comes with a sentence of life in prison plus 30 years. The charges the shooter faced, which also relate to his arson of a mosque a month earlier, carried a maximum sentence of the death penalty. The defendant entered a synagogue with the intent to kill all those inside because of his hatred for Jewish people. Days earlier, he used fire in an attempt to destroy another sacred house of worship because of his hatred for Muslims, said Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco. There is no place in American society for this type of hate-fueled violence. On April 27, 2019, the last day of Pesach, John Ernest, a white supremacist, walked into the Chabad Synagogue in Poway, California, near San Diego, and began shooting worshipers. The attack occurred 6 months to the day after the Tree of Life Synagogue murders in Pittsburgh that killed 11 Jews who were praying there. Ernest killed one woman, Lori Gilbert Kay, and injured three others, including Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein and a child. In a manifesto, he mentioned the shootings at mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, 6 weeks earlier. Two more fatal anti-Semitic attacks occurred later that year in Jersey City and Muncie, New York. This nation stands with Lori Gilbert Kay's family and the survivors of these unspeakable acts of terror, said acting U.S. Attorney Randy Grossman. We emphatically reject the defendant's hate, racism, and prejudice. We hope the conclusion of this case brings some measure of comfort to all those affected by his heinous crimes. A survey of members of AE Pi and AE Phi, the most prominent national Jewish fraternity and sorority, respectively, found that large numbers of respondents have experienced anti-Semitism on campus. Survey found that about half of respondents have felt the need to hide their Jewish identity on campus or in virtual campus settings. A slim majority said they are somewhat or very reluctant to share their views on Israel. The survey was commissioned by the Louis D. Brandeis Center for Human Rights Under Law, a legal organization that aids Jewish and pro-Israel college students, a recent guest of Too Jewish. The survey was conducted by Mike Cohen of the Cohen Research Group in Washington, D.C. The survey was conducted last April before the spike in anti-Semitism in the U.S. surrounding the Israel-Gaza war the following month. Survey was made available to all AE Pi and AE Phi members nationally, and 1,027 chose to respond. 710 of the 5,158 AE Pi students and 317 of the 3,310 AE Phi students. Cohen said it was an unusually high response rate. Survey comes amid concern among Jewish organizations and Jewish campus activists about marginalization and harassment of Jews on college campuses. National Jewish groups have long seen campuses, and particularly the debate over the Israel-Palestinian conflict on campus, as a front in the fight against anti-Jewish bigotry. In the last year, Jewish student activists have organized themselves to fight anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism online. Those concerns have reached the highest levels of government. Kenneth Marcus, founder of the Brandeis Center and a past guest of Too Jewish, served as Assistant U.S. Secretary of Education for Civil Rights under President Trump. 2019, Trump signed an executive order mandating robust enforcement of civil rights protections for Jews on campus, which included anti-Israel activity in the definition of anti-Semitism. That order prompted a series of federal complaints alleging anti-Semitism at campuses in the U.S., some of which were filed by the Brandeis Center. Survey found that half of AE Pi respondents and two-thirds of AE Phi respondents had personally been targeted with an anti-Semitic comment in the 120 days before the survey was taken. Cohen said the higher number of sorority members who experienced anti-Semitism was due partially to having been called gendered terms such as Jewish American princess. Roughly a quarter of each group said they heard offensive jokes about Jews. Slightly lower numbers said they heard people repeat age-old anti-Semitic stereotypes about Jews being greedy or cheap. Smaller percentages reported hearing offensive statements about Israel, comparing Israel's actions to those of the Nazis, for example. More than 60% of students in AE Pi and AE Phi said that at some point they have felt unsafe as Jews on campus or in virtual campus settings. Most of both groups said they're worried about verbal attacks. About a third of each group said they're worried about online harassment or being marginalized or penalized by a professor. About one in six respondents feared physical attack. That's a lot. The survey found that more than 80% of both groups consider other Jews their extended family and are supportive of Israel. A majority of the respondents have been to Israel. These findings ring some pretty consequential alarms, more closely resembling previous dark periods in our history, not the 21st century in the U.S., said Kenneth Marcus. They reveal that students for whom being Jewish is a central or important aspect of their identity are feeling increasingly unsafe, visibly expressing their Judaism for fear of harassment, social bullying, and other anti-Semitic attacks. Congress agreed to send $1 billion to Israel to replenish the Iron Dome missile defense system Israel used during its conflict with Hamas in May. But the funding won't flow as a usual part of Congress's comprehensive spending bill after a group of progressive Democrats, deeply critical of Israel, vowed to vote against the bill if it included the Iron Dome support. The threat by members of the Squad and their allies is likely to have the effect of making clear how far outside the mainstream they are on issues related to Israel. Republican lawmakers voted against the overall spending bill, but they are supporting the Iron Dome spending. In addition, the conflict offered an opportunity for Democrats who want to maintain a strong relationship between the U.S. and Israel to press that point. We passed this bill with the support of the majority of my colleagues and reiterated our ironclad support for our ally Israel, said Representative Kathy Manning, a Jewish Democrat from North Carolina who led the effort to move the Iron Dome funding to a standalone bill. While the Democratic mainstream, including the Biden administration, remains unchanged and supportive of all issues related to Israel, some progressives during the Gaza conflict called for diminishing or ending defense assistance for Israel, which runs about $3.8 billion a year, almost all of it used to buy American weapons, by the way, including hundreds of millions of dollars for Iron Dome. This week, other progressives said they were angry to have the new money inserted into the funding bill without warning or debate. You have a very narrow margin in the House. Somebody in our leadership made the decision to put Iron Dome in literally 6 hours before the bill was going to be released. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington said, that just isn't the way things work around here. There was no discussion about it. At least one member of the squad, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, opposed the billion-dollar spending, not just on procedural grounds. She cast Iron Dome as part of a system designed to oppress Palestinians. We must stop enabling Israel's human rights abuses and apartheid government, said Tlaib in announcing her plan, no vote. Biden administration supported strongly the $1 billion infusion. President Joe Biden himself assured Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett that the money would come through last month when they met. Moderate Democrats and Republicans cast the rejection of Iron Dome as inappropriately targeting Israel. Representative Elisa Slotkin, a moderate Jewish Democrat from Michigan, said Iron Dome was an inappropriate target because it is strictly used for self-defense. Whatever your views on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, using a system that just saved hundreds, if not thousands, of lives as a political chit is problematic. The stopgap emergency spending bill passed without any Republican support and without the Iron Dome allocation. Representative Steny Hoyer, the Maryland Democrat, who is the House Majority Leader, decided to have the standalone vote to get it through. I talked to Foreign Minister Lapid and assured him this bill was going to pass the House, said Hoyer in a speech on the floor of Congress. There were 4,400 rockets in 10 days that rained down on Israel, one of our closest allies and friends, Hoyer said. Luckily, no, not luckily, because they had Iron Dome. Very few lives were lost. Very little property was lost. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
Introductory Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? What do Jews believe about life after death? Introductory Judaism with Rabbi Sam Kohan is an 8-month-long weekly class, Sunday afternoons. It's available in person and on Zoom. To sign up, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. There is a charge for the class and the textbook, and scholarships are available. The Introductory Judaism class is open to everyone, Jewish or not. Want to refresh and update the Jewish learning you had before your bar mitzvah? Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Or maybe you're even thinking about becoming Jewish. Register for Introductory Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. Or you can visit BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or you can email rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Introductory Judaism is taught in person and by Zoom Sunday afternoons from October to May at Congregation Beit Simcha, 2270 West Einar Road, just west of La Cholla. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish Nir Barzilai. He's the director of the Institute for Aging Research at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, the director of the Paul F. Glenn Center for the Biology of Human Aging Research, and of the National Institute of Health's Nathan Schock Centers of Excellence in the Basic Biology of Aging. He has a fascinating book on aging, and we started talking about the fact that as human beings, we have the potential locked within us to live to 115 or 120 years and to do so basically healthy and then just get sick at the very end and die, but that's not how we do it most of the time. You have identified different areas of aging. Can you talk about the genetic aspect of that and how you were led in your research in that direction?
Well, we agree. We geroscientists that's how we call ourselves, we agree that there are 9 hallmarks of aging. And in order to be a hallmark of aging, you have to show that something is changing with aging. And when you fix it, you get an extension of health span and lifespan. And by the way, health span is really the most important thing, right? I mean, that's what we want.
Sure.
The longevity might be a side effect because it's the same mechanism, but we want health span. And I'm not going to dwell into those hallmarks, but in centenarians, we are finding that a lot of those longevity genes that we found are really those hallmarks that we discovered mainly in animals. And we've made progress not only in finding those genes and understanding their function, but also there are a couple of drugs that have been developed based on our findings. So I think we're at this stage, we're catching a wave that will bring us from not from hope to promise, that we have been doing, but realizing this promise.
Tell us, I don't know if it's too much detail, but what are the 9 areas? And you've discovered that maybe some not very expensive drugs may actually address some of these areas. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. So let me just start with the centenarian and make 2 points. You mentioned they're Jewish. And they're Jewish. We use Jewish centenarians for 2 reasons. One is the genetic reason. We had a combination of fortunate and unfortunate circumstances that we are genetically very homogeneous to each other. We were down to very few. We had intermarriage. We were forced for isolation, all this history. But we have genes that are very homogeneous to each other. So I would need probably 50 times more people that are not Jewish to get to the same result. So it's a shortcut. Okay, so it's not that we think that Jews live longer, but it's because for genetic reason, we can really serve a purpose.
No, but they fetch enough so that it feels like they're living longer.
Well, men die before their wives.
Right.
And in fact, women live like between 3-4 years on average longer than men.
Right.
And when they ask me, I do say they want to die, right?
Yeah, that's the joke. It's terrible.
That's the Jewish
All right,
joke.
Sorry, I'm going to get in trouble for that from my wife, I'm sure. But go ahead, anyway.
The second thing about Jews in the United States, that they're homogeneous from a social economical reason. The people in my study have an average of 17 years of education. And in the United States, the socioeconomy status is determinant of health span and lifespan. So by the fact that we get more homogeneous population genetically and more homogeneous population from socioeconomy is very helpful to make really good discoveries and relatively fast.
In this, in these discoveries of the markers for aging, the areas in which aging takes place, you've opened up maybe the avenue for pharmaceutical companies, for others to think about ways of addressing each of these areas as something that can be, I don't know, fixed, is that the wrong way, or at least delayed, stalled?
Modulated,
thank you. Can you talk about that a little bit and how that might work?
Yes, so one of the interesting things about those hallmarks for aging is that we can fix one and affect the other. And part of those gerotherapeutics, those drugs that we have that we know can target aging, caused us in the past to fight with each other because we thought that everybody finds the wrong mechanism. But the truth is that if you have a drug that takes your cell or your organ or your whole body that is old and making it young, you're going to fix lots of things. And that's what happened. And there is one drug that is commonly used in the United States, and I'm sure that some of your listeners know or use it. It's called metformin, and it's used to treat type 2 diabetes. But it's actually not it didn't start as an anti-diabetic drug. It was used against the flu and malaria. By the way, people with COVID that were on metformin had two-thirds less chances of dying, or let me put it, they had third the mortality if they were on metformin. So metformin came from a different field, and at that point people realized that people who are using metformin who have diabetes have lower glucose levels. But really what metformin does, it corrects all those hallmarks of aging. And it's a generic and cheap drug, and it is a really good gerotherapeutic. It probably can change health span by 2-3 years, which is huge in epidemic value.
The potential, once we've identified these areas, for us to live essentially healthy lives longer, that's revolutionary. What are the limitations on how, we say that probably the lifespan of the human body is 115 or 120 years, as we said, like Moses. Why is that?
That's a great question, and I can answer it a little bit philosophically. We made a bad deal with the devil at one point. We complained that life expectancy in millennia was between 25 and 35. Although there were always older people. So the devil said, oh, sure, you know. So he gave us the clean water, the sewers, the antibiotics, the vaccinations, the surgery. And what did we get in return? We got Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, terrible diseases, lingering diseases with terrible quality of life. So we are now looking at that problem and discovering that it doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, maybe we're going to make a new deal with the devil, and when we'll get to 115, we're going to complain about other things. But in the meantime, we can extend our health span and lifespan, and we're determined that it's good for everyone, and in particularly for the economy. There's huge longevity dividend by living healthier than what we do now.
You know, they say that people spend most of what they spend on medical care their last 5 to 7 years of their lives. Certainly there's economic benefits to living healthy until, you know, you die in a short period of time. I'm voting for something to help with osteoarthritis. I'm just saying, this is totally selfish, but in these genetic, can you isolate, like, what are the nine areas, if it's not too complicated for our general listenership?
Well, I'll give just examples, because I don't think we can do it in 5 minutes.
Right. Right.
But I'll give you one example from centenarians and one from other points. Actually, both of them we've done in centenarians. So the most common longevity genes are those that have impaired function of our growth hormone system. There is the growth hormone, but there are other growth hormones. And 60% of us centenarians have functional impairment. In other words, if you change your energy from growth to what we need the more is repair, repair of the breakdown, there is really great science to support that, including the fact that when even we treat animal with antagonists to the growth hormone, they also live longer and healthier, and there are drugs that are developed around that. So that's metabolism. The other example is an area that's called proteostasis. That's when our proteins are not only malfunctions, that they are malformed, and they start accumulating in our cells. An example is what accumulates when we have Alzheimer's, the beta amyloid. And autophagy is a process that is a garbage disposal. It takes those proteins and takes them apart, and in fact, it's a green garbage disposal because it can circulate them to form, you know, better protein. And when we fix this autophagy that goes down with aging, we can fix in animal models Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, but also increase health span and lifespan in animals pretty well. So those are like two examples out of the nine of how we can target aging and extend health span and life.
Dr. Barzilai, where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about your book, but also about aging research?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, it's wonderful.
The book Age Later was written for people like your listeners, and it has stories that are going in and out from centenarians, and you can skip the things that you're not interested in and find the things that you're interested in, including future development. Another thing is to go and put my name and find, I gave several TED Talks. Maybe the TED Med Talk was the best one, and then you can learn more about aspects that I didn't talk about.
I just want to tell you that my wife is convinced you're going to get nominated for a Nobel Prize, so she's very impressed with your research.
Well, thank you to your wife, but. The concentration is now to make it happen.
That's it, always. Thank you so much, and really a pleasure to have you here on Too Jewish. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with me this morning on Too Jewish. I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be author Janice Spector, whose fine new novel, 2027 South Green Road, explores the Cleveland Jewish community in a weird and wonderful way. And don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person for Simcha Torah this Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. and every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m. Friday, Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. for services, Torah reading and Kiddush, and oh, by the way, Shemini Atzeret is Tuesday morning at 9:30 a.m. with Yisker. Our playouts this morning comes for Simchat Torah, Sisu v'Simchu, b'Simchat Torah Tuesday night. My friends, have a Chag Sameach, Moadim l'Simcha, a final set of festivals of joy, a healthy week, God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week we pray of health and peace.
Sisu v'Simchu, b'Simchat Torah, ותנו כבוד לתורה, שישו ושמחו בשמחת תורה, 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 ותנו כבוד לתורה.
שישו ושמחו בשמחת תורה ותנו כבוד לתורה שישו ושמחו בשמחת תורה ותנו כבוד לתורה שישו ושמחו בשמחת תורה ותנו כבוד לתורה שישו ושמחו בשמחת תורה.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.